You're listening to nativetalk.net. Audio files are available online at nativetalk.net. And now, your hosts, Cliff and Brandon. If common sense were a cat, they would be buried in sand. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us today on the nativetalk.net radio podcast with Cliff and... Brandon is actually here.
Good morning, Sir Clifton. Glad to be here.
I haven't seen you in like a month and a half.
Well, I mean, technically you haven't seen me in like a year and a half.
No, whatever. We did get together in Washington, if you'll recall.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's right. You were there for like 5 minutes before you had to go to a hospital for 3 days.
Yeah, decompression sickness is not very much fun. But at least we got to have dinner together, right?
That's right. Yeah, I remember you hobbling around on your peg leg like Bucky the Pirate.
Email if you want to chime in with your comments.
Podcast. I can't feel my crabs. My fingers are numb.
Podcast at nativetalk.net. You can also call the message line 970-278-5791 if you would like to leave your audio comments. Did you hear the show we did last week with Jason?
Can I lie to you and say yes? Because it sounded like it was really cute.
Oh my gosh. What, you couldn't take 30 minutes out of your day to listen to fun and interesting Native Talk radio?
I'm a very busy man, Clifton. All right. If I had 30 minutes to just throw around, I'd be on the podcast.
All right. Well, I wanted to start today with a... let's get the... Where is it? There it is. A little bit of a criminal person.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you're about to see is true.
All right. Now, what do you do, Brandon, if you escape from jail? You're in prison. Okay, well, a county jail. California County Jail, and you escape. What do you do first?
First thing I do is clean the spoon that I use to dig the holes so I can eat breakfast with it, too.
Okay. Well, what if, what if, like this fugitive inmate, you escape from a county jail in California by rappelling down the side of the building with a bed sheet?
How? Hold on. What floor was he on?
Does not say.
Because I want to reserve my impression, like, wow, you did that from the 15th floor is way cooler than, oh, you did it from the second floor.
I'm betting it was probably the second floor.
Lame.
Because he's not really much of a criminal mastermind. But no, seriously, you just escaped from county jail. Where do you go to avoid capture?
The very first thing I do is I find some clothes somewhere. I break into some house somewhere. I get some clothes from somewhere, a thrift store. I run in and grab them, something.
He did that. He got away clean. Okay. He's got clothes. He's escaped. He can go anywhere he wants. Where do you go? You got your clothes. You got your transportation. You got your money. You got whatever you need.
I get out of the country.
Okay. Well, 26-year-old Laron Campbell went straight to his sister's home in Antioch.
Wrong. You don't go to family member's house.
Why not?
Bad move, buddy. Come on.
Why is that a bad move? Maybe he hasn't seen his sister in a while.
Yeah, I don't think the police are that stupid to be like, I wonder where he could go. Certainly not his family.
Well, guess what? The U.S. Marshal Service and the Antioch Police immediately launched a stakeout of his sister's home because that's his nearest relative.
Oh, my goodness.
And then as they entered the home, because they had reason to believe he was in there, they looked around and they couldn't find him until he came crashing down through the flimsy drywall ceiling and landed on the floor at their feet.
You step on the rafters, not the fiberglass, man.
Sadly, his brilliant plan means that his sister, 24-year-old Markeisha Alexander, was also arrested on suspicion of harboring a fugitive. They think she might have known something about this ridiculous plan.
I just picture her laying up awake at night like, that's a mighty big rat in the attic.
And he crashed through. Yeah, he's not the smartest tool in the shed there.
A shed would have been better, I would say.
All right, now let's do an animal pile. why this is my Animal Pile song, I don't know. But it is. So, what is your stance on hunting?
I'm fine with other people doing it, but I choose not to do it myself.
Okay. Do you think there should be rules on hunting?
I think that you should know what the population of what the population in a hunting area is, and you should know how many are needed to reproduce the next generation, and you should limit the killing so that that number stays preserved.
Okay. I think that I'm going to go ahead and agree with that one.
You know, that way so that the population is there for next year, so the hunters can come out and hunt again next year, you know?
What about an age limit on hunting? Should it be just left up to the parents completely, or...
Okay, here's one. I think if you are legally blind, you should not be hunting. Yeah, that's... But age? No. I'm like, if you're 150, you know, probably not.
What about what about toddlers? Giving guns to toddlers. I mean, what could go wrong with giving guns to toddlers?
I mean, depending on how you do it. If you give them a BB gun or a 22 and you lay it down and you have a 4-year-old pull a trigger, they're not holding the gun. I don't really see a problem with that either. Well, and I'm a preschool teacher too. You know, it's like, okay. I know 4-year-olds are very capable. And if you teach them how to do it safely and you oversee them, there should be no reason why they can't fire a simple gun like a 22 or a BB gun.
Well, now residents of any age, no matter how young, could soon legally hunt in Wisconsin under a state assembly bill that eliminates the state's minimum hunting age. Currently, a resident must be at least 12 years old to purchase a hunting license or to hunt with a gun unless they're participating in a mentored hunt. Because what you said, if you're teaching a child to hunt, that's always been okay. But if you want to go out hunting alone, apparently 2-year-olds could now be legally able to hunt alone.
They can just march out in the backyard with their .357 and go bag a big one.
This bill would allow people of any age to part. Oh, okay. Never mind. I'm sorry. With the mentor.
I'm glad that one's getting walked back. I was a little concerned.
With the mentored hunt, children as young as 10 could hunt under a mentored program, okay? This would allow people of any age to participate in a mentored hunt.
Okay, much better.
This would also eliminate the requirement that a hunter and a mentor only have one weapon between them. So your 2-year-old could have their own gun.
I like right? that. I'm fine with that.
34 states already have no minimum hunting age. Democratic Representative Gary Hebel says, "This is absolute insanity that we're talking about giving 2-year-olds guns." Republicans countered that parents should be the ones to decide when children are old enough to handle weapons. Measure now goes to the Senate. So,
yeah, I agree completely. I mean, I probably wouldn't let my 2-year-old pull a trigger, but that's my parenting choice. You know,
and I think if I'm going to go with you on this, because I think that parents who have hunting licenses and are generally trained should know what they're doing and know the capabilities of their children. For example, my son is 6 right now. I don't think I'd take him out there, but I've met other children who are that age that I would say, absolutely, you know, you just got to judge it on based on the kid case by case, with the parents being that judge. And if you make a poor choice, then you're responsible.
In my judgment, it's a very, very bad call to give a loaded weapon to a 3-year-old and then walk in front of them on your little hike to go hunting. That's a stupid, stupid decision. But if you're laying down at a shooting range or at a target practice or whatever, and you have them lying in a prone position and you have the gun safely loaded and pointed down range and you have control of the firing range or whatever you're using, what's the problem with the child laying prone and pulling a trigger at 2, 3, 4 years old?
If you're being responsible, and like I said, if anything goes wrong, you as the adult are absolutely held responsible. So you need to make sure that your judgment is in the right place as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm fine with that law. I agree with it.
All right. Now what, and next up in the animal pile, what is a possum?
Hold on. Wait, how was the last one an animal pile?
Hunting. You hunt animals.
Oh, all right.
That has to do with animals?
Kind of a stretch.
Okay,
sorry.
You know what? I only have three stories, so.
Gotta fit it in somewhere. All right, wait, what about opossums?
Possums.
Opossums.
Nobody says opossum. I've never met anybody in my life who's called them opossums.
Hi, I'm Brandon. I say opossum.
All right, well, what are they?
Oh, possum. sorry.
Oh, my gosh. Oops. Nope. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh, God. Talk about bad timing.
Come
on. Have these things prepared, okay?
I was prepared. I just was
gonna
on the
wrong.
Gotta
put my little overlay down.
I was on the wrong bank. Now, come on. Tell me about possums. What are they?
I'm glad we waited so long for that soundbite. That was totally worth it. Just right on the moment. Okay, anyway. They're very good at playing dead and hanging upside down.
Okay, so if you come across a possum, you know he's alive and he's playing dead and you're drunk, how do you respond?
I'd be like, how'd I get this time machine and travel back in time to when I drank? Once I got over that, I'd be like, what a cute little possum. I'm a poke it with a stick.
Would you kiss it?
No, God, no. Have you seen their teeth? Holy crap.
How about give it beer?
Yes, I might do that.
All right. Well, police in Pennsylvania have now cited three men after posting Facebook pictures of themselves doing just that, giving beer.
Oh, God damn it, you guys. You put pictures up.
Giving beer to the possum and kissing it. State Game Commission issued a summary violation against 18-year-old Michael Robert Tice, 19-year-old David Mason Snook, and 20-year-old Morgan Scott Aaron Zeller for unlawful possession of wildlife. How do you have unlawful possession of wildlife?
Also, how are you all drunk at under 21, you guys?
Right, because you never drank under the age of 21.
Me? No, not I.
Authorities say Tice kissed and held the animal while
Tice.
Snook poured beer on its head and in its mouth.
They yeah, we'll probably enjoyed that.
The game commission say the animal stumbled off afterwards.
Happy as hell.
All right. Now, you mentioned drinking. So you've been drunk before.
Many, many, many times, yes.
Have you ever drank and drive?
Unfortunately, I've made that bad decision more than a dozen times.
Did you get caught?
Never.
Okay. So, let's say you didn't want to drink and drive, but you needed to go somewhere. How do you do it?
In the past, I either walked, ran, asked for a ride, or I rode my bike.
Okay, well, remember, this is the animal pile. In Polk County, Florida, all the crazy things happen in Florida.
Tell me they rode an alligator to the 7-Eleven.
Which means this is kind of sort. It's an animal pile, but it's also a Florida pile.
He says Florida slowly sinking, sinking into the ocean. He says the housing tracks are built on halfback and the rest have fiction.
Okay, so in Polk County, Florida, police have arrested 53-year-old Donna Byrne with a DUI. Not for driving a car, but for driving a horse.
Awesome.
Down a busy highway. She was riding a horse drunk on the freeway.
On the freeway, not on the side.
Nope. Because that's the only way she knows how to get home. Blood alcohol level of 0.161.
Ooh.
Twice the legal limit. Byrne is charged with a DUI and animal neglect for endangering and failing to provide proper protection for the horse. Deputies took the horse to the Polk County Sheriff's Animal Control Livestock Facility while Miss Byrne was booked into the Polk County Jail, where she will apparently is probably still sleeping that off.
Kind of so. Deserved that one there.
Don't drive the horse on the freeway. My God, I didn't know you could get drinking and driving on a horse.
I really wanted it to be surfing on an alligator. That would have been way better.
I honestly, I wish it was an alligator because that honestly would be so awesome. But
I'd want that as a desktop background. Personally.
Unfortunately, not the case. All right, we got to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a moment with discrimination against Native Americans and how to deal with it. So we'll be back with that right here on NativeTalk.net.
.net radio program with Cliff and Brandon.
Flip us on, then flip them off. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Our House Grief Support Center's mission is to provide the community with grief support services, education, resources, and hope. Our House, with the support of trained volunteer group leaders, helps those grieving find sweetness in the tears. With your help, you too can become a volunteer and help grieving children, teens, and adults embark on the journey to hope and healing. For more information, visit ourhouse-grief.org or call 888-417-1444. Hi, this is Cliff.
And this is Brandon.
And this is the NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced.
Whoa, wait a minute. What?
What do you mean?
I'm pretty sure we're not the greatest podcast ever produced. I mean, have you heard of Serial?
No.
Cracked Podcast?
No.
Or Surprisingly Awesome?
No. Okay. The NativeTalk.net radio podcast. The greatest podcast ever produced that I have actually listened to. So visit us online at nativetalk.net and tell your friends to download a few shows because, well, apparently we need it.
Yeah, if you ever want to measure up with podcasts that are actually good, like The Bugle with John Oliver or WTF with Mark Maron or Heart of History. You're listening to nativetalk.net, not just another stupid podcast. Second thought, maybe we are just another stupid podcast. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.
Welcome back to the nativetalk.net radio podcast. Brandon looks like he's dancing over there.
You can't play the Jackson 5 and then just expect stillness. I mean, I'm not dead inside.
It is Michael. I miss
him. Baby Michael.
You know, his voice never changed that much.
Just stayed right up there in that registry, and I loved every minute.
Oh, my goodness. All right. You can give us a call. Nobody will answer the phone, but you can leave a message at 9... No, I'm serious.
It sounded great.
If you call this number, 970-278-5791, I will not answer that phone, okay, unless you happen to magically call when we're recording, which is not likely.
Pretty random time, so that's one in a million.
But if you do that, I'm going to answer that phone and we're going to take your call live on the air. But most of the time, it's going to go to message. You leave a message and then we'll play it like at a later date.
I'll tell you what, if anyone actually calls while we're recording, I'll give you $20. I will set a $20 Visa gift card in the mail to anyone who magically randomly calls on the day and hour that we're recording.
You know what that means, right?
I don't.
Wait. Come on.
Oh my God, you're so bad at this.
I was on the wrong bank again. Phone lines are open. 970-278-5791. And if you call now, Brandon will send you a $20 Visa gift card.
I'll even pay postage.
Can you believe I had that ready?
I can't. Ready is a relative term. I wouldn't use it so loosely, but...
All right. How would you describe discrimination? What is discrimination? What does that mean to you?
I think I'd like to start by making a difference between discrimination and bias. You know, like bias, I think we all carry, but discrimination is when you take that bias and you use it against the person to keep them from doing something. You know, like say you're an employer and you don't like people that, I don't know, wear head coverings. And so you say, anyone that walks into my place with a head covering doesn't get a job here. That's discrimination, I believe.
Okay. Well, how would you fight it?
I guess it would depend on the setting in which it's given. If it's given in public, there's nothing you can really do to fight it. But if it's given in a professional setting, then you can go through legal channels to try and, because there's laws against discrimination, you know?
Okay. Well, now let me, but are there laws against bias?
No, there's no laws against bias.
So let me ask you this. Do you believe, as I do, that most discrimination is based in ignorance.
No, I don't agree with that.
Okay, why not?
Because I think that people have experiences that create their discriminations.
But don't you think that if they learn more about the group that they're discriminated against and start to see them as people rather than, caricatures, you know, whatever stereotype they've got in their brain, the more you see a group as actual individuals, as people, and understand their background, their hopes, their dreams, you start to relate to them, that it's really hard to discriminate against people that you connect with.
I agree that with more education, it can get better, but there's also stereotypes exist for a reason. And depending on where you're looking for your education and experience, you may find things that challenge your stereotypes, but you're also going to find things that reinforce your stereotypes. So I think it's like a little bit of both, where they have experience, but they have experience in the prism that they're looking for. And if they see something that challenges it, they may reject it, you know, so it's like you may tell them more, they may hear more, but they're like, oh, that's the outlier. That's the one that breaks the mold. I know these people do this. I'm kind of rambling, not really making a lot of sense.
No. That makes sense to me, because what you're saying is sometimes people can be absolute jerks is what you're really saying there.
Yeah, but I'm also saying that they can be jerks to a certain group of people based on what they've seen or heard. You know, like, does that make sense? So even though if they got to challenge their stereotypes and learn different things about people that they might grow, they still have some form of education or experience with these people. Otherwise, they wouldn't have the stereotype, right?
Okay. So, for example, if you hate nightclubs and I tell you that nightclubs are fun, and you respond with,
you're in a nightclub, for God's sake. What do you think's going to happen at a nightclub? People are drinking, are doing drugs.
Yeah.
There are women there, and then people have guns.
See?
You're just stereotypes. You're so good at finding the right time to put in an audio clip. Doesn't sound choppy at all. I love it.
I hate you. All right, so you mentioned bias. Would you say that bias is more like based on maybe appearance, whereas discrimination is based on like people groups?
I think discrimination could be people groups and also physical appearance, but yeah, I think bias comes first from physical appearance. You have preconceived notions about a group of people, and then when you visually see people from that group, all of those thoughts and feelings that you had before seeing that person come flooding into your brain, and you have ideas about this person you've never talked to, never met before, but you already know, you know, in your own head how they are.
Okay, so I'm gonna show you a photograph and you tell me what you see. All right, let's see here. Can you see that photograph?
I see a meeting in what seems to be a classroom or an office, probably a classroom with all the stuff on the walls.
And what do the children look like?
Well, they're not children. They're like college students.
They're high school students.
Oh, okay. They do all look to, except for that one kid, they look to all be people of color.
Really?
Am I right? Am I wrong? It's hard to see. Maybe that chick on the middle left is a white girl also, but the other three look to be kind of tanner or darker.
Okay. When I looked at that photo, I saw normal, regular people. I didn't see anybody weird. If I met these people on the street, I would just be like, hey, what's going on? You know, I wouldn't, you know what I mean?
Know
they
what
look
you were
like
asking
normal
for.
Kids. They look like normal kids to me.
Yeah. I didn't know what you're asking for. They look like students sitting around a table.
Okay. They
like.
Are all members of the Mohawk Club. They're Native Americans, and they're up in Messina Central High School, where they have all been on the receiving end of negative stereotypes.
Where is Messina? Where, what state?
It's way up in, you know what?
It's, Google it. All right, moving on. Okay. Sorry.
I forgot where it was, okay? Okay, I got it. It's in Messina, New York, on the U.S.-Canada border, all right?
Oh, okay.
And 10% of the student body at their high school is Native American. 10%.
Wow.
That's in a country where we've only got, like, you know, 1% overall. So And what they're noticing is that Native Americans see way more discrimination in areas where they're a majority. And the reason why I point this out, why I showed you the photo, is because when you look at these kids, I don't see stereotypical like natives where you're like if somebody comes in wearing like a headdress or something, I understand how that person might attract attention. But in a place where you've got 10% natives and they're drawing attention to themselves just because there's a higher concentration of natives and people know who is a member of that group and they're experiencing discrimination. Whereas us growing up out in California, I mentioned it a couple of times that I was a Native American, but I never received any discrimination. But I think that we might have been the only Native Americans in our entire school, let alone the town of Rio Linda. Yeah,
it would depend on what you mean by discrimination, because I definitely got made fun of.
For being a Native American?
Oh, yeah. I mean, all throughout my life. even when I was 19 and working at a Ford dealership, the technicians learned I was Native American after I worked there for like 8 months or whatever. And I would be walking through the tech line, you know, going to go do my job. And a technician would hold their right hand up at 90 degrees and go, "How?" as I pass by.
You know, like, up. Are you serious?
Yeah. Or they started calling me chief all the time. Once they learned something personal about me, they started using it to pick on me. But I find that to be the culture of the shop. You know, everyone was getting jokes played on them all day long.
Okay, so you didn't take that as like you were being singled out.
I mean, if I was going to be a snowflake about it, yeah, it was racial discrimination and stereotyping, and I could have probably gotten them fired if I was going to be a little baby about it. But yeah,
he said how to me.
It's guys that I've known for a while that they've accepted me into their fold and they learned something new about me. They're now finding whatever joke they can think of to make fun of me. It's just how they are, you know?
So that's what men do, make fun of each other.
Especially in a situation, in a setting like that, yeah.
Yeah, like, for example, if somebody went diving and they have, like, a big quota of, like, 2,000 pounds and they only got, like, 35 pounds. That would be... That would be an example of an opening where somebody could rip on you.
Well, yeah, it never happened. So I don't know where you got that example.
Oh, I'm sorry. 58 pounds.
It's a big difference. All right.
Oh, yeah. Season. You would only have to go down like, 47 times to reach
one goddamn dive. All right. You get out there and you try it in this season for your first time and you'll see. All right. It's not as simple as you think in the summer. Damn it.
Was that an actual example? I thought I was using a hypothetical one.
Pushed a little close to home there, Clifton. I caught 100 pounds the first day.
Well, according to a poll, a new NPR poll, more than a third of Native Americans say someone has made negative assumption or offensive comments about their race, something that all of these students have personally experienced. Well, actually, that's pretty good that only a third have experienced this.
Oh, that's another thing. Throughout school, I would get this a lot. Well, that's not the same thing.
That was not what I...
still not the same thing.
I'm sorry. I should have played the horse one back when we were doing the horse story.
Probably. That's a good spot for an audio clip. But no, just little stupid stuff like that where they would ask me really ignorant questions like the noble savage stereotype. They would assign things like traits to me that I didn't possess because they saw Pocahontas. I don't know.
Jokes about teepees.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Teepees and horses and buffalo, stuff like that.
Assuming the reservation is riddled with crime and poverty.
No, cause I didn't live on a reservation.
No, but I mean, you know, just in general, you know, oh yeah, your reservation is all poor people.
In being in Sacramento, there weren't a lot of reservations around us, so it wasn't really like a thought that kids had going through school.
Teach 'em pale face. Jeez, all about red man.
It's so demeaning and respectful, says Keely Thompson Cook, the Mohawk Club treasurer. I get so passionate about it because I just don't see where I shouldn't have an equal right to somebody who maybe isn't of my exact skin color.
I don't understand what that... I lost the meaning of that sentence.
Okay, so what she's saying is when people are using racial slurs, jokes about teepees, assuming that her reservation is riddled with crime and poverty, she's saying that that's demeaning and disrespectful, and she feels like she should be on the same level as everyone else. In other words, she feels like she is being singled out and picked on.
But what about all of the jokes people make to Mexicans or black people or white people or Asian people? There's jokes about every race, and people use that as a way to make people feel bad, or they it's just a part of life. It's just something people do, right? Isn't it better to
everyone? To everyone.
To everyone. Yeah, it's just people find something that's individual to you, and then they use that to make fun of you. And I always found the best strategy was to find something that was bad for them and flip it on them and get them worse than they got me. And then they shut up and walk away, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, people, you know, one of the best ways that I actually made friends when I was younger and in elementary school, people would rip on you. They would make fun of you. They would, I mean, about anything. You know, my name is Clifton, and people would say, "Oh, you're a Cliff who weighs
Clifford,
a ton."
Clifford the big red dog.
Yeah. and you weigh a ton. You're a Cliff who weighs a ton. Cliff ton. and I'd give it back to him and be like, "Yeah, well, your hair looks like you got in a fight with a lawnmower and you lost."
Oh, damn, Cliff! Solid burn. Whew.
I was in elementary school, all right?
Well, and I guess if they're coming at you with Cliff Ton, it doesn't take a lot to beat it.
But those people became my friends because we could give it back to each other, you know? But whenever you, like, take it personally and start reacting in a negative way, it's like you become a target.
Thank you. That's what I wanted to say.
It's the experience that I've had. You got to know how to stand up for yourself. You got to know how to give it back. When somebody punched me in the arm or the chest, I turned around, I punched him right back. And it was like, you know, hey, buddy, you know? And it was like you were able to find a connection. You know what I'm saying?
You lost me on that last one, but
okay.
I see what you're getting at.
For example, my best friend Steve. You know Steve.
The show a few times too.
Yeah, well, when I first met him, I was stealing my bike back because Holly had taken my bike. And
Holly's our sister. For those of us without your Dakota rings on,
and she had ridden it over to her friend's house, and I went to go get my bike back. And Holly's friend's brother was Steve and caught me. And the first thing he did was he hit me in the back of the head. And I turned around and I punched him in the chest. And he's like, "What are you doing?" I go, "I'm getting my bike back." You know what I mean? And it's like we were able to have like a, and then he punched me and I punched him back. And then he punched me, I punched him back. And it was like an instant like friendship, you know?
Oh, yeah. That sounds like the foundation of a real healthy relationship.
You know what? Steve is known for giving titty twisters, so.
Wow, you think about Steve and your second thought is titties? Interesting.
No, that's
nice,
what he
nice
does.
Nice insight into your psyche.
No, that's what he liked to do for a long time in high school.
Look,
my point is boys give each other crap.
Yeah, okay? But after he gave you crap, you had 2 points.
You know what? So what these kids have done... What these kids have done is they've created a group and they get together and they make friends and they talk about stuff. All right. Mm-hmm. And Julie White, a guidance counselor who's also a Mohawk, says, "I couldn't be more proud of these kids. I think I teared up a couple of times just listening to them." White went to Messina High School as well, and she remembers being called racial slurs. "These children," she said, "are creating a new reality. Some of the things that they're speaking out against, I guess we just didn't feel empowered enough to do the things when I was here."
That I absolutely agreed with. They don't feel empowered enough. Now there's this huge culture where speaking out against this is like cool or something, you know?
Like, yeah.
Rather than just accept people for how they are, we want to change the base nature of humanity. and steer people away from things that used to be, I mean, yeah, it was taken too far. Don't get me wrong. It's been taken far millions of times probably. But there's a certain element of bullying that's supposed to be like a friendship, like a
yeah,
joke
like what I was talking about.
Laid into it, you know? And like you said, if you just curl up in a ball, you become a target. But I guess not in today's world, you'd become a hero.
Well, these students, they do feel empowered. Their group organizes like events at the school, and they've created an event called Native American Day, and where they kind of teach people about themselves, about their culture, and they say they want it to be even bigger. Last year, Healy says that non-Native American students came up to her after the teach-in, wanting to know more about her people's history, culture, and traditions. She says that new curiosity helps all Mohawk students. They now feel more comfortable coming to school being Native American and being proud of who they are. And by starting these conversations, students in the Mohawk Club hope to flip the script from Native American stereotypes to Native American pride. And
I liked that. That sounded really good.
Yeah, and I like that too, because I think there is a place for all this, because some people can actually be really mean, you know, and it's not always meant in like a friendship testing the waters kind of a thing. In a lot of ways, it could be like really bad.
Hateful.
Yeah. Next week's story, I've got about Native Americans facing job discrimination. And at first I was thinking, what a snowflake. And then I heard the things that they were saying to this guy. And I'm like, you know what? That is pretty bad. So there's like a balancing act between having, you know, good fun and going way too far.
Well, and it sounded like the teach-in that these Mohawk students gave was a voluntary event, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that that's fine. And I was talking earlier about curling up into a ball. That doesn't sound like curling up into a ball. That sounds like educating, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's a dang good thing.
And I like that a lot more. It sounded at first that they were just going to be like, stop talking bad about me, and that's all they were going to do. But no, they took a correct step further.
Yeah, I think those guys are pretty cool. Now, for next week, I've got, as I mentioned, Native Americans facing job discrimination as a tribe works to employ its own. So we didn't get to that one today, but we'll save that one for next week. In the meantime, thank you for listening. That'll do it for us today. But we'll be back next week with more stimulating Native Talk Radio, available online at nativetalk.net. The phone number, 970-278-5791. Till then, have a great week.
We've secretly been listening to other podcasts. Congratulations to the radio show that won't put you to sleep. You're listening to nativetalk.net. Now grab your nets and let's go fishing.